The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we'll talk about dining with kids at Disney World. That's coming up on this episode 112 of WDW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here for episode 112. We are going to talk about dining with kids at Disney World today, as I mentioned in the opening. And that's because there are special challenges when it comes to picking places to eat and with using the dining plan. And so I just want to dive into some of that today. As always, a reminder to follow me on social media. I'm very active. It's a huge part of what I do every single day, namely on the Facebook page, where I do Q&As once a month. And I also use it as sort of a testing ground, including for this podcast episode. I'd like to post ideas and tips and see what people have as feedback. It's a great place to get immediate feedback. And so I got lots of ideas for today's episode. So make sure to follow on Facebook if you're a Facebook person, also on Pinterest and Twitter and Instagram. You just pick the social media platform that you like or that you're on and follow me at WDW Prep School there. As always, I will have some stuff after today's main topic, so stay tuned for that as well. So let's talk about dining with kids at Disney World. So I think there's a couple of things here. One of the issues that people often cite when they're talking about eating in theme parks is the only thing for kids to eat is chicken nuggets and burgers and macaroni and cheese, that kind of stuff. And if that's what your kids are into, you're definitely going to find it. But it is a little bit remiss to say that that is the only thing that they offer. In fact, my kids have never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or they don't eat cereal, like all those sort of basic kids things. They don't even like them. I love them. They don't. And we have never had any issues finding things they like. My daughter's actually a vegetarian, so that adds a whole other layer of complexity. But we have never had any trouble. And there are lots of options. So I would challenge you, if you want to have interesting kid options, to look for menus that are more unique. And I'm going to give you some ideas by park, but I just want to remind you, if you happen to be using the dining plan, that quick service credits are not split between children and adults. So kids actually can order from the adults menu, which gives them a lot more options. It also gives you more of an ability to split credits, because let's say you have two children and you order one adult entree with a credit, then they could split it so that you can stretch those credits out. At table service restaurants, they do have to order from the kids menu. So the rules are different between the two. But as you're selecting restaurants for quick service, you can look at the adults menu to see if you want to eat there. You don't have to just look at the kids menu. So I'm going to go park by park and just give you a few of my ideas for where to eat at some of the places that we like that have interesting food options. And then, of course, that'll be in the show notes, because you're not going to be able to memorize everything I say in the podcast. So let's start with Magic Kingdom. My favorite there for everybody is Columbia Harbor House, which is a quick service restaurant. They have a tuna sandwich on the kids menu, which is obviously much different than burgers and nuggets. But because it's quick service, I would definitely recommend looking at the whole menu, because there are several interesting options there, especially in terms of fish options. Be Our Guest is a quick service for breakfast and lunch, which I love it for those two meals. Once again, since it's quick service, you can look at the whole menu if you're on the dining plan. But this menu is so sort of unique that one time we were in line and this woman behind us said, "What What are kids supposed to eat here? They don't eat Maui Maui. And she was trying, she saw Mahi Mahi on the menu and she said Maui Maui. So clearly if she can't pronounce it, they probably don't eat it as a family and wouldn't order it at the restaurant, but my kids would eat it. So Be Our Guest actually is one of my favorites for both breakfast and lunch. And I think you can find some good stuff to eat there. Liberty Tree Tavern is a table service restaurant at Magic Kingdom. The kids menu, because remember, it's a table service, so kids do have to order off the kids menu if they're on the dining plan. And the kids menu there includes turkey and barbecue chicken, so, you know, something a little bit more unique and filling than some of the sort of junk food type of options at other places. All right, so let's move to Epcot, which has almost a million restaurants, I think. I've eaten at almost all of them as well. There's just a lot of good food to be had at Epcot. I can't possibly name all of them, but I'm going to name a few. First of all, Sunshine Seasons is a great quick service restaurant, and I recommend it for everybody. It is sort of set up like a food court, and it's in the same building as Soarin', so I often like to have, you know, ride Soarin' midday with a fast pass and then head over to Sunshine Seasons. There's lots of different stations to choose from, and they include things like Asian food and sandwiches, so everybody can find something to eat. Once again, it's a quick service, so kids can order lots of different things there. The next thing is Katsura Grill, and that's a quick service in the Japan section of the World Showcase, and it includes things like teriyaki chicken, but they also have sushi on the main menu. My kids happen to be obsessed with sushi. It's like one of their favorite foods, so of course that's a good one for our family. The next is Yorkshire County Fish Shop, which is a quick service in the UK section of the World Showcase. It's just a window that you walk up to and you can order fish and chips. These next two are table service restaurants. So Beer Garden is in the Germany section. It's table service and it's German. It's a German buffet. So if your kids are interested in trying new things, then surely they are going to find a few things that they like on the buffet. And as a bonus, they also have live entertainment there, which makes it really fun. And then lastly for Epcot is Garden Grill, which now is served three meals a day. It's home cooking type of food, served family style and, you know, on platters and big bowls at your table. And as a bonus, there are characters there as well. So you can get some good home cooking while you're at Epcot there. So let's move on to Animal Kingdom, which has some fantastic places to eat, especially quick service, but also table service. So the first thing I want to mention is the newest thing that I've tried. It's the newest thing in terms of restaurants at Animal Kingdom. It's the new Harambe Market area, which is in the Africa section, you know, back by safaris. And it's sort of like an outdoor food court, but impeccably themed as everything at Animal Kingdom is. And so you can go to the different windows and order the different, you know, foods depending on which window you go to. I happen to have a gyro there, which was enough for two people, but I was traveling alone last time, so I had to throw half of it away. But the menus there are really good and have lots of choices. So that's in the Africa section. Flame Tree Barbecue is a quick service. The kids menu is not that interesting there, so I would just suggest focusing on the adult menu, which has lots of barbecue, predictably, since it's a barbecue restaurant. And Flame Tree Barbecue has a very like spread out outdoor seating area, including great views of the water and Expedition Everest, which is on the other side of the water. The next two are table service restaurants at Animal Kingdom. The first is Tusker House, which is a buffet that has both American and African foods, and we love it. It's delicious. It's also a character meal, which is fun. It's the classic, you know, Disney characters, but in their safari outfits. And so lastly is Yak and Yeti, which is Asian food. And my son and I love it. We split a dim sum appetizer and an entree there, and it was just the right amount of food for the two of us. And we especially like sitting upstairs. We just kind of randomly got placed there, but it was a perfect view of the park, and we really enjoyed our meal. But anyway, great options for lots of different kinds of food at Animal Kingdom. Lastly is Hollywood Studios. I always find dining a little bit more difficult here because they don't have as many options, but there are a few that I want to mention. One is Starring Rolls Cafe, which is a quick service. They have kind of a random mix of things, including sandwiches, sushi, and cupcakes. The trick with Starring Wolves is that it does close mid-afternoon, I think usually around 3 o'clock. So if you're interested in eating there, you have to go in around, you know, closer to lunchtime than dinner time because they will not be open by then. The Brown Derby, which is the best place to eat, I think, at Hollywood Studios, is a table service restaurant. It's definitely higher end, and if you're on the dining plan, it's 2 credits. But they have great menus. We have enjoyed our meals there. If you want to go somewhere that's a little bit more casual and maybe you don't have a reservation, you can go to the Brown Derby Lounge, which is adjacent to it, but they don't accept the dining plan at the lounge. But I think they have some things in common with the main restaurant's menu. Lastly, at Hollywood Studios is 50s Primetime Cafe, which is table service. And this is a, you know, fun restaurant where they hassle you like it was the 1950s to eat all your food, and everything's very well themed. My mom loves it because it reminds her of the kitchens that she grew up in. But it's really, it's home cooked food, huge portions, very easy to split, but it's, you know, things that a lot of people will like meatloafs and briskets and things like that. The desserts are also huge, so you can split it. This is probably my favorite restaurant to split entrees because it's just an enormous amount of food. So anyway, that's sort of park by park. And of course, there are restaurants in the resorts and in Disney Springs. And I, you know, we don't have all day for me to go through those, but you can definitely go through all the menus for the restaurants as you're sort of trying to decide and just see what looks interesting to you so that you can decide ahead of time where you want to eat. I will link in the show notes, not only to the restaurants I just mentioned, but I have several posts on the site with that have dining information in them. So I'll link to all the dining guides as well so that you can kind of go through and go beyond my recommendations and see what makes sense for you. Now, when it comes to dining plan, I want to talk about a few things. I already mentioned that quick service credits are not split into an adult and, you know, between kids and adults, so you can do that. But also, you might want to think if you are going to maybe purchase the dining plan, you may not get the best value out of it if your kids are at the lower end of the range. So for instance, kids are considered age 3 to 9. So if you have a 3 or 4 year old and you're having to buy the kids dining plan, you know, and they don't really eat, you know, you'll have to figure out if that makes sense for you. But also at the adult level, kids 10 and up are considered adults. So if you've got a 10 year old that doesn't eat a whole lot, you have to figure out if the adult price makes sense for you. It also might not make sense if you have adventurous young children, because at table service restaurants, they will not be able to order off of the adult menu. They will be restricted to whatever the kid options are at the location you're at. So let's say you have a 9-year-old that likes to try new foods and will definitely, you know, love what is on the adult menu. You may not want to purchase the dining plan for that child because they will be more restricted at the table service restaurants. So I hope that gives you sort of some things to think about when it comes to dining, but definitely don't think you're going to be restricted to quote unquote theme park food, you know, junk food, because when you're there for a whole week, it would be such a shame to have that every single day. But there's lots of different options, and I hope you will explore those as you decide what to do for your trip. So let's talk about some news that happened this week. First of all, the Christmas Day parade taping is scheduled to take place November 10th through the 13th at Magic Kingdom. And this opened a whole can of worms of discussion this week, because what happens normally is the Christmas Day parade taping is the first part of December. So we can usually kind of guess every year when that's going to take place, but they decided to move it all the way up to November 10th through the 13th. If you happen to be going to Disney World during that time, Magic Kingdom on Main Street will be quite congested because that's where they tape the parade. But beyond that, it shouldn't be a big deal. So if I were you, if you're going, I wouldn't change my plans. I would just be aware that Main Street isn't going to be an option. So if you're planning to shop there or whatever, it's just, it's going to be busy. They usually do wrap up taping by late afternoon or early evening. So they won't still be there in the evening. Or I mean the late evening or the night, but during the day, Main Street will not be a good place to be, but the rest of the park should be totally fine. There are people that have asked if they can get in the taping, you know, like be on TV and be in the taping. And it's my understanding that that is primarily cast members and their families who are invited to do that. So there's no guarantee that you will be allowed in for the actual taping. And then another thing that came up with this is that usually the Christmas tree at the front of Magic Kingdom doesn't go up until after the parade taping, because it's right there at the front of the park where they have all the cameras to record the parade. And so they can't have the tree there and the cameras. So they do the recording and then shortly after put up the tree. I don't know what that means this year. I assume it means that the Magic Kingdom tree will be up sooner than in the past, because that space will be, they'll be done using it, but we'll just have to see what happens. But I guess it is possible that mid-November or late November that the Magic Kingdom tree will be up. Speaking of Christmas things, the Candlelight Processional, which takes place at Epcot during the holidays, the lineup of narrators has been finalized. And so if you are going to be going to the Candlelight Processional, if you're going to be at Epcot in December, then you will need to check the list and see who's going to be the narrator for your dates. I have the whole post about holiday things, and it has the list in it. I will link to that in the show notes. Most of Disney World sort of kicks into holiday mode in early November, but Epcot is kind of an exception because most of the stuff there takes place after Thanksgiving, and Candlelight Processional is an example of that. 1900 Park Fair, which is a character meal buffet at the Grand Floridian, typically serves lunch. They normally serve breakfast and dinner, but the week of Thanksgiving, they appear to be offering brunch. There has been no announcement made, and when I check the park hours on the website, it doesn't say that it's open, but readers have been getting a brunch reservation there. So I don't know what the menu is. I don't know if the character, if there's going to be characters there. I have no idea. I assume that we will find out about it soon. But if it's something of interest to you, they appear to be calling it brunch if it takes place from noon to early afternoon, because breakfast goes to 11:50, I think. And so then it from noon to early afternoon is brunch. So that's Thanksgiving week as of right now. If it's beyond that week, I'm unaware of it. No one has told me they got a reservation, but that's something to check into if you happen to be going there. My next note says, Pirates of the Caribbean is wet now. So let me explain. Pirates of the Caribbean is obviously a ride at Magic Kingdom, and it was closed for months because a lot of things needed to be worked on. But when it reopened, a lot of people who have been going to the parks for decades were shocked that they were completely soaked when they got off of Pirates of the Caribbean. And it does seem to mostly just impact the people in the first one or two rows. And it doesn't always happen. It seems to depend on how far apart the boats are and what the capacity of the boat is. You know, if it's completely full of people, then you're more likely to get wet. But I just wanted to tell you that as a warning, because in the past, never really thought of Pirates of the Caribbean as having a high potential for getting you wet. But apparently now it has a very high potential, and not only just a little bit wet, but a lot wet. So that's something to look out for. Don't get in the first row or two if you don't want the chance of getting completely soaked. And then finally in the news department is park hours were just changed massively. Heather and I were up Friday night and Saturday morning this week, because they came out Friday afternoon, and we were making all these park hours updates, and we're just kind of shocked at how much most of November changed drastically. I mean, they just extended the hours at Magic Kingdom and Hollywood Studios. They added shows, just a lot going on. December had a lot of hours changed, and notably, they took away extra magic hours during the busiest, you know, Christmas weeks of the December 19th through the 31st. We're completely shocked by that. We have no idea why they took away the extra magic hours. Maybe they will bring it back. I don't know. January did not have changes. February changed a lot. And so there's going to be a lot of like Magic Kingdom is staying open later, Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom. And then March and April both had changes, including Fantasmic's being added. So previously, Fantasmic wasn't scheduled after February, but now we see it in March, April, May, which is fantastic because we weren't sure what was going on with that. But that does also mean that Fantasmic dining packages should be opening soon to reflect that Fantasmic is now available. What else changed? Oh, and May just came out. So this is the first time we've had May's park hours, and So those are now available. And I have monthly dashboards for every month of the year with information on closures and park hours and articles that are related to that month and predicted crowd levels and that kind of stuff. And so I will link to the monthly dashboards in the show notes. So if you want to read about month specific information, you can check that out, including the new park hours that were just updated this weekend. What else? Let's see. I normally do a featured company right now before the quick tip of the day, but instead of that, I am going to instead ask for a favor this week. So iTunes, if you're an iTunes user, you probably know this, but iTunes, it has listings for podcasts that include the ability to give ratings and reviews for podcasts. So if you're an iTunes user, I would like to ask you a favor to go ahead and rate and review the podcast and give it honest review and rating, obviously, and because that is sort of the currency of podcasts. One of my goals is when people are planning Disney World trips and they happen to like podcasts, that they be able to go into their podcasting app and search for Disney World. And I just want to be one of the ones that shows up because, you know, obviously I want to help them. And the only way to really make sure that you show up at the top of that list is to have more ratings and reviews. And so that is what I'm asking today, is if you could please do an iTunes rating and review, that would be fantastic. And we can help more people plan their trips. And finally, I have a quick tip of the day that was submitted by a listener named Jamie. And this is what Jamie said. And this is sort of a twist on, I think, a tip I've probably given in the past, but I think this is even better than my version. It says, I just booked FastPass Plus this week, and now that I have my touring plan figured out, I went into my notes on my phone, and I typed my hour-by-hour plan, my touring plan. I included all of my FastPass Plus times and any dining reservations, and then I took a screenshot of my note. I did this for every single day of my trip. Each morning as we head to a park, I'm going to my camera roll, and I'm going to make that day's plan my lock screen picture on my phone so I can easily tap the home button or the top button and quickly reference my plan and FastPass Plus times. This will help save battery life and time. And then Jamie included a picture of what the plan looks like, but it's just basically a note that is listed. So I think that's very, very smart and helpful because batteries do drain quickly. So the less you have to open apps and try to connect to the internet, the better. And my Disney experience routinely does fail to show information. During my last trip, my FastPass Plus reservations stopped showing up. And I knew that I had them, but I know that if I was my first trip, I might have panicked and thought, where did they go? Did I lose them? Am I not going to be able to use, you know, whatever. So the less you can rely on my Disney experience, the better off you will be. And taking screenshots of the app or making a note, like Jamie said, is a great alternative. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, including all the show notes, you can visit wdwprepschool.com/episode112 or check the show notes in your podcast app. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.